I'm Jean Prue, and I'd like to welcome you to the Littleton Networking Center. Networking continues to be a core competency for us here at Digital, and this facility is the center, a focal point of all of our hardware and software development. Very shortly, you will be visiting our Pathworks lab. We're extremely proud of that product, in part because it is our highest volume software product within the company. We are shipping 10,000 licenses per week and have an install base of over 2.5 million users. Other products developed here include DECnet OSI, TCP/IP, and the IBM SNA interconnect products. I really hope you'll enjoy your tour.
Hi, I'm Larry Walker of the Network Product Business. Let me add my welcome to the one that you just got from Gene. We're particularly pleased to host Bob's DVN today and to allow you to take a virtual tour of what we're doing here in the Network Center in Littleton. We're very excited about what we do. We're excited about our products, excited about our business. We've done such things as take our hubs up to the number 3 spot in market share over the last year. So we're glad you're here. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Margaret Olson, and here in the Network Operating Systems Group, we're experiencing serious attrition, particularly among software engineers with modern skills. And they're not necessarily leaving for more money. They're leaving for a better future and for stock options. And I would like to know what you would say to those engineers to entice them to stay at Digital.
Hello, Bob. My name is Diana Williams. Charlie Crist, on his last talk here at LKG, made reference to organizational changes that are taking place. He made the statement that a $10 billion company making money is better than a $14 billion company that's losing money. My question to you is this: what are the current company parameters that we're aiming for?
My name is Rhonda McDonough. I work in the Pathworks SQE organization. I understand the need for a salary freeze at this time. My question is, does it apply to all Digital employees? Does it include bonuses? And if not, why not?
Hi, I'm Bruce Sweet. I'm the engineering manager for the HubWatch product. Since the salary freeze went into effect in June, 6 of the 19 engineers working on HubWatch have left Digital to join competitive networking companies such as Wellfleet and Crosscom. My question is, what is the senior management doing to stop the attrition in the network products group, and when?
Hi, my name is Beverly Feldman. I'm a member of the U.S. Postal Account Team, which was awarded a $200 million contract last week by the Postal Service. My question is, since one of our goals is to have the Alpha AXP chip become a major player in the marketplace today, what is Digital's strategy towards getting the high name recognition companies like a Dell or a Compaq to commit to our technology?
Well, thank you all for coming this morning to this quarterly employee forum. Before I take your questions and answer the questions that were just posed, which I thought were pretty representative of those that I hear and good questions, I want to just cover about 3 topics and some few prepared remarks here. First thing I'd like to talk to you about is the quarter itself and put that in some perspective. I want to update you on the status of the salary freeze, which addresses one of the questions we've just seen. And I want to talk to you a little bit about our advertising and communications campaign. Now, you may have read already that during the first quarter just ended, the company reported results that were somewhat better than were expected from the analysts. We lost $131 million, or 98 cents a share. And as I've said, you can't be really satisfied with any loss, but it's good to see the progress that we're making. We were ahead of our plan, so we'd planned for a loss. We lost less than we'd planned to do because of better performance by a lot of our employees. It's perhaps difficult to interpret a loss as progress, but if you think about the Q3 that we had last fiscal year, we lost $1.34. In Q4, we lost $1.22. In Q1, 98 cents, even on dramatically reduced revenues for the quarter, which is our seasonal pattern. So revenues off about 20%, and even so, narrowing the loss, which shows good progress. These results overall are encouraging, and I particularly want to take this opportunity to thank all of our sales professionals and our sales support people for outperforming in the quarter. We exceeded the revenue targets that we set for ourselves for the quarter, which contributed to those better than expected results. If you look at some of the specific improvements that you can highlight during the quarter, the total operating revenues were up 4% to $3.1 billion. Product revenues grew 6%, and service revenues grew for the first time in a long time by 1%. I want to pause here to take a minute to particularly thank all of the MCS organization. Multi-vendor customer services in every territory but two exceeded their goals for profit. And in the two territories, they came at 98%. Profits for the quarter were up 10% versus last year, which reflects really on the MCS continuing improvements in efficiency and productivity. And so as a group, we all owe John Rando and the Multi-Vendor Customer Services Organization some real recognition for their performance in Q1. Standing here, our estimate is that this performance is going to continue to exceed plan for Multi-Vendor Customer Services. Now, company-wide, we saw strong order rate growth. It represented the third consecutive quarter in which the order rate growth for our products was higher than the corresponding quarter of the previous year. That's the first time in 6 years that we've had three consecutive quarters with order rate growth. This quarter, the order rate growth was in all geographies. It was up very strongly in Asia Pacific and up a little bit in the United States and Europe. The Alpha AXP revenues more than doubled year over year, increasing 138%. And they now represent 60% of our system sales, excluding PCs. And PCs, for that matter, grew by 83% year over year and now represent 22% of our total product revenue, which is really quite remarkable when you think only 2 years ago we really didn't have an effective PC organization. Perhaps one of the most important things, certainly to the analysts, is that we stopped the erosion in our gross margins. You know, since this time last year, gross margins had been coming down every quarter rather dramatically. And in many respects, it's very frustrating to all of you and certainly to management for all of the cost reductions that we have been doing, the downsizing of the operations and improving our efficiencies, largely eaten up by reductions in gross margin. On the other hand, if we hadn't done those things, by now we'd be in desperate straits. So we did keep up with the decline in gross margins. We had to stabilize that and turn it around. This quarter, we saw that flattening out and stabilization, particularly in the systems business unit, which, again, if you think about the seasonal decline in revenue, is quite remarkable. Normally, on a 20% decline quarter to quarter in revenue, you would have expected to lose 2 or 3 percentage points in gross margin. But we didn't, and in fact, we were up a few fractions of a point. So that's pretty impressive performance there. Now we have a number of programs to continue to improve that gross margin. So if you think about getting the costs in line, stabilizing the gross margins, now starting to grow those gross margins, that should result in a dramatic reduction in the losses that we've been experiencing. On the cash front, we ended the quarter also ahead of our plan and expectations with $881 million in cash. Typically, you use a lot of cash during the first quarter, again, for seasonal reasons. You don't have the revenues coming in that you normally have because of the seasonality, but you still have the expenses. So we had $881 million in cash. That's a lot. In addition to that, on the first day of this quarter, we deposited a check from, or at least electronics funds transfer, from Quantum Corporation, because as you know, they acquired part of our storage operations in the quarter, and that was for $290 million with some additional money to come for a total of $360. As I mentioned, we continued to reduce our expenses, not as dramatically as we had in our plan. We were a little bit behind on expense reductions, but there's nothing alarming about it. We just have to continue going forward with the expense reductions that we've planned for this year. And our objective, as everybody here hopefully knows by now, and everybody watching the forum, is our objective is to break even from operations by the end of this calendar year and return to sustained profitability by the end of our fiscal year. Now, talking about the reaction of Wall Street analysts to these results, it was very positive. It's clear that these efforts are working, and we've moved in about 6 months, really, from a tremendous concern on the part of analysts and investors that the company wasn't going to make it. And that was, of course, reflected by a dramatic drop in the price of the shares of Digital. And so that by the end of the fourth quarter, our shares were bumping along a several-year low of somewhat under $19 a share. Today, only 3 months later, the stock is up 60%. 60%. I got a DVN just 6 weeks ago, and at that time, the stock was up 30%. So it's a very dramatic improvement in the price of the stock, which is people voting with their money that we're turning the company around and wanting to get on board before the company actually demonstrates with financial performance what they can see coming. Now, I thought we'd have a few clips here of what some of the analysts had to say about our quarter. I'm going to read these because I understand that sometimes when the DVNs are shown out in the territories, people in the audiences have trouble seeing what's on the screen. This particular quote says, "This is the first encouraging quarter I've seen in a long time," from David Wu at Warburg Group. Here's one that says, "They still have work to do," and that's certainly the case, "but we're starting to see some progress." John Jones at Solomon Brothers, who's been one of our strong supporters recently. Here's another one from John Adams at Adams, Harkness & Hill. "I don't think that the issue is Digital survivability anymore, or that they will find a way back to black ink." So he's convinced we're going to find it. They're not sure when we'll return to profitability, but they're convinced we're going to, and that's a big change. Here's one that says, "In our opinion, Digital is serious about returning to profitability in 1995. Digital is going to appreciate 300 to 400% during the next 4 to 5 years, or in other words, $100 stock roughly in a 4 or 5 year period of time." I like that one particularly well. I hope he's right. I'm certainly not going to try to talk him out of it. Another one here from Barry Willman at Goldman Sachs. "This shows, reflecting on the quarter's performance, that the company is continuing to make the transition to product lines with potential for growth," which, of course, what they'd all like to see. Now, even the Boston Globe, which is our local paper, had a, we sometimes had a little rocky relationship with the Globe, not always kind to us, says, "Digital posts promising results." And for those of you in the area, you know that that's nearly a home run if you get that much support from your local paper. We're also seeing some positive results from the program that we started on in the quarter of dismantling the large functional organizations we have that were somewhat out of touch with customer requirements and getting rid of the matrix infrastructure that was necessary to support those functional organizations, moving that within the computer systems division largely so that we have a much more streamlined and much more responsive organization. And we're seeing that that's going pretty well on schedule. There's some puts and takes in anything of that complexity, but on the whole, we're doing some very positive and optimistic progress there, and there's a little bit of momentum growing, which you can feel. Now, while I'm thinking about it, I want to thank everybody in our company, those here and throughout the world, for the hard work that you did in Q1 that achieved these results. And again, with respect to the sales force, under difficult circumstances, as we're making this transition to more and more indirect channels, even so, the salespeople were out there getting the orders and exceeding their goals. And that's really an outstanding performance. I want to encourage everybody, of course, to continue these efforts because it's not going to be any let up, really. But it's rewarding to see that all the hard work is beginning to make a difference in an enterprise of this size. Now, 6 weeks ago or so, when I had the last employee DVN from Stockholm, I answered some questions about the salary freeze. And I pointed out that the real issue there was that, in my judgment at least, the most important thing we have to overcome was a perception in the part of the marketplace, the analysts, the customers, and so forth, that Digital was not perhaps going to be financially viable. And the best way to do that, clearly, is to return to profitability as quickly as possible. And because of that, I instituted that salary freeze back in June in an effort to enable us to return to profitability as quickly as possible. Now, I said at the DVN 6 weeks ago that if I could see that we were going to be profitable, I would lift this salary freeze. Standing here, I can't see it. You can't see the profitability, and given the size of the company and the very, very close to break even that we are, we really won't be able to see it until after the fact if it occurs. On the other hand, what I can see is we've made substantial progress, and if you look at each of the business unit commitments and you add it all up, we would be profitable from operations, if not in fact profitable in total, by the end of the calendar year if every business unit achieves the objectives that they've committed to. Because of that, I've decided to announce the lifting of the salary freeze today to this audience. It'll be lifted immediately. This is not without some risk to the speaker. I want to point out to you that I really need all employees to pull together and make those commitments. If we don't achieve our objectives, you can be sure that the press, with respect to me personally, will be quite unfavorable. And people will say, why did they do that when they blew their chance to return to profitability? So in a very serious way, we need to do it. I have confidence and our employees worldwide, based on how well they performed in Q1, I'm going to take that chance on a personal basis, and I feel very comfortable in doing so, but I need your support. So we're going to lift it. Now, let's talk about what does that mean. We've been moving to these business units, and we know that we're going to operate our company in a very different way than we have in the past. At least for the last 10 or 15 years, whenever we had a salary action, this was administered completely by a geography perspective. That's not the way we're going to go forward today. And this is going to take a little more planning than we've done before, because the way we want to go forward is within individual business units to be able to administer compensation programs that are appropriate to that business unit. And they're different. They have different business models. And they have different levels of competitiveness, or they may be behind the marketplace in terms of compensation. Some of the questions that were asked about network engineering, for example. We have to do each of these things by a business unit focus. Now, having said that, it's not all black and white. We always in digital want to go to one extreme or the other. We have to have a balance then with the local geography as well. What's competitive in all of the territories that we do business in all the individual countries? So this is going to require a new methodology that we've been trying to design and work on. The objective is to emphasize the importance of business units and business unit dynamics within the compensation arena. At the same time, to ensure that we have another number of other needs that are met. You know, focusing on retention, the question that was asked about retention, making sure that we minimize the loss of critical people because of compensation. A sense of fairness. We can't have, because one business unit is doing spectacularly well, that every other business unit feels badly about their success. We want to feel as a team here, all one company. As we move to business units, we do not want to give up the fact that we all work for Digital Equipment Corporation, and there's a sense of fairness. And over time, some business units will do better than other business units. But as a company, what's important for our shareholders is that we collectively return a profit. We have to look at individual contribution. You know, I've talked on nearly every speech I've given around this subject has to do with my determination to move to a model that pays for performance, that rewards those people that are adding the most value to the enterprise. This is simple in concept. It's rather difficult to ensure, along with the fairness issue, and so you've got to work out some programs, and that'll be going on as I'm standing here. In fact, we're meeting again on it today to discuss a new methodology and a new approach. But again, the direction of the company is to administer compensation through the business units, consistent with geographies, and so there has to be a balance consistent with what's in those areas. It also says that not all of the raises will happen immediately, because they'll be, again, by business unit and territory. How do we need to happen? The freeze is lifted immediately, and so I'm delegating that responsibility to the business units. It'll be funded from the operational performance of the business units within their budgets. And as I say, there'll be some differences among business units as perceived by their management, so that they have some flexibility to achieve their desired results. We won't also have it all at any one period of time. You couldn't take that big a hit. So there'll be some raises this quarter. There'll be some in Q1 of the calendar year, and Q2, and so on. In some cases, it'll just be a six-month delay in what would have happened anyway. In other cases, it'll be quite different. And so I hope that's enough on that. But if there are any questions, there are anybody that didn't understand what I said or would like clarification, we'll pick that up after these next remarks about our communications program. Now, returning to the discussion around perception, in addition to returning to profitability and showing improving profitability, we're working with analysts to call attention to the FUD, if you will, fear, uncertainty, and doubt that's out there sown by our competitors, and also misclaims and misstatements by our competitors. We're doing that in a very aggressive and direct way. And to that end, we have started a new advertising campaign at the corporate level, in addition to all of the product ads and so forth from the business units. Now, I think I described previously that we chose a worldwide agency for this corporate campaign, DDB Needham, after an exhaustive evaluation of some 30 different firms. And we've gone over the type of ads, and you'll see that they're very different than the traditional ads in PC Week or whatever. And they grab your attention. They're not particularly pretty ads. They're not designed to be pretty. They're designed to first get the reader to stop, and then they communicate in an editorial fashion real facts about our company to persuade the reader to think about the reality as opposed to the hype. When we did an analysis, by the way, of this whole subject, we did a number of detailed focus groups. And we had an ad of this type. This ad describes a server. And it describes a server, and it's got, as you see, the digital logo. The same ad was shown to some focus groups with different logos. The IBM logo, the Hewlett-Packard logo. And then we tested what was the response to the people looking at the same ad with just different logos. And it was quite alarming in a sense. Because what it showed is that depending on the logo, the system, the message had more or less credibility. And in digital's case, the digital logo had the least credibility. Now, one thing you notice right away is nobody has great credibility. If your message is about two-thirds believed under the best circumstances, that says something about our whole industry. The customers have been burned by some of these claims. But even to allowing for that, you see that we're at about 46% on overall brand credibility. And I think, frankly, just the most surprising to me personally was you look down here on technical statement or service statement, where we know, and it is independent surveys show, that we are the leader in providing services, and are certainly among the leaders in our technical capabilities, and yet the audience out there that we're trying to reach doesn't see it. So if you thought that we had a challenge for ourselves, certainly this drove home that point. And says we have to invest more in combating this perception. Because the reality is we are a leader technically and a leader in services, and we still have quite a bit of value in this brand name. We clearly have to have a new campaign. So we launched this new campaign this week on October 25th, and it started in U.S. Major newspapers, primarily the Wall Street Journal, and is going to be in the Wall Street Journal on a global basis. It'll start in the U.S. and roll out to Europe and Asia Pacific over time. The approach is to say that digital has a mission-critical attitude to its customers. We understand the importance of information technology to the success of their enterprises. It will address our viability, our accountability, and our commitment to our customers' success. As I mentioned before, the look of the ads is very different. It's very blunt and somewhat controversial. I expect it to generate a lot of email, both positive and negative. Now, so here's the plan, is to roll it out first in the U.S. and then in Asia and Europe somewhat after that. I also mentioned we're going to start showing some television advertising, which we haven't done traditionally as a company. Here we'll be aiming for high impact areas for the audience we're trying to reach. We've done some analysis on that. And we're going to see a sample here of the types of ads. It's not necessarily the ads you'll be seeing, but very shortly you'll see ads, perhaps these, or certainly of this type.
Critical computing is threatened by stuff like this. Who do people call?
These are much more aggressive in nature than anything we've run before as a company, and I think it'll feel very different. Now, we're going to be ready for the first of these TV ads in the November 24th NFL football games. We'll be broadcasting these little 15-second slots. And so we're going to hit some football. We're going to hit Sunday television in particular and focus our advertising. We're not going to spend a great deal of money on it by having very short and very distinctive ones. Now, you'd have to admit that music's distinctive. I don't know. In fact, distinctive may be the most generous thing I can say about it at my age. But I think to the younger audience, that music resonates. I believe the person's name is Lenny Kravitz in that particular ad. The point is that our difference to our customers is that we are dedicated to mission-critical performance. And you know that in that last one that showed about our failover protection, our ability to get up our systems quickly after disasters of natural and whatever is really unparalleled in the industry. Security of our systems, things that really matter to mission-critical applications, we want to bring that again to our customers' attention because it's valid. Now, I tried this on our top sales professionals at the Decathlon just recently. They were very enthusiastic about it. And I asked them for a lot of feedback, which is a good way to see, you know, our top salespeople see these ads as helpful, and they were encouraging us to get them out as soon as possible. And as I said, we have started those. Longer term, we're going to be continuing to emphasize strengthening our brand image. There'll be almost in every ad somewhere there's an opportunity to buy something, which is a product focus or a service focus of the ad. And there's a lot of methods for collecting audience response and determining which of the ads are the most successful that will build on those. This is going to be a hard-hitting campaign. You'll be able to see in the journal probably two or three times a week full-page ads of this type running both in the United States and worldwide. We'll be in our speeches and in the advertising challenging the vaporware that our competitors sometimes put out there about their own products as well as our company. Now, I guess to wrap up this part of the discussion this morning, my perception is we're making great progress. It's because of all the hard work that you and all of your associates across the world are providing and turning digital around. We are quite confident that we're going to return to profitability this fiscal year. I don't know standing here, nor does anyone, whether we'll return in Q2 or Q3, but at some point this fiscal year, it's quite clear we will return to profitability. Our objective, again, is to be profitable from operations by the end of the second quarter. And my commitment is that we've lifted the salary freeze today. We're already planning some salary actions to take into account those places where we're at the most risk of losing key talent, and also taking into account the hard work and performance of all employees And we're redesigning the way that we administer compensation. There'll be more variable components for all employees over time. And the issue is, starting with the top management and going down, to be more variable based on performance. The issue is to reward performance and change the way we deliver it, be able to tailor it by business unit and by geography to our needs. And we're going to be much more aggressive, as I've said, in our advertising, in our speeches, and in challenging our competitors. And I've already seen some positive impact of those challenges from some speeches that I've personally given and that some others of our executive team has given. Now you're seeing some analysts questioning some of the statements that our competitors have made. We just call their attention to, wouldn't it be a good idea to ask about this subject? And I maybe give a chance to give you some examples of that later this morning. But with that, I'd like to end this part of the conversation and begin to address the questions that were asked in the video and also from the audience. Let's see, the first topic had to do with, what are we doing and what can we do to help retain our hardware and software engineers? Well, clearly, it's not, as was pointed out in the question, it's not strictly about compensation. It's about what do you see as your opportunity as an individual to continue to contribute and make a difference to the enterprise and to grow personally. And that's an individual decision. My job function and the job function of most of management is to create an environment where creative people can flourish and feel valued. And that's what we're trying to do here. It's hard because we're going through a tremendous transition in our company. But that is our objective, is to create an environment where creativity, innovation, entrepreneurialism is valued and rewarded. If that appeals to you as an engineer or any professional person, any person in our company, if that environment appeals to you, then you'd want to work in this company. If a sense of fairness and ethics and what our company is about with respect to core values is important to you, then this is the kind of company you'd want to work for. In any company, there are ups and downs. You know, you have the opportunity to leave the company at any time. You can leave in the future if we don't turn it around. You can make a decision today, but I would encourage you to stick it out, of course. That's my job function, and you'd expect me to say that. But I would encourage you anyway, because in your career, there'll be very few opportunities that any of us have to participate in a turnaround of this magnitude and importance. Very few opportunities. Digital is a great and proud company with a proud tradition of its value system, the kind of people we are, the kind of value we bring to our customers, and we got in a lot of trouble as a result of some poor decisions that we made collectively over time. We didn't address those problems, but we're addressing them now. We're going to turn this enterprise around, and you can be part of that. For me personally, that's what motivates me, to be part of one of the most significant turnarounds in history of industrialized companies, and to do so within a company's environment whose value system is congruent with my own. If that appeals to you, that's why you'd stay here. Now, over the time, obviously, you've got to be compensated. We have to pay competitively, and our commitment is we will do that. We will do that, and particularly, we will emphasize pay for performance. We have to return to profitability before we can have more benefits and share more widely with all employees, but that is our objective. If that appeals to you, I would encourage you to stay and work here. Engineers like to see their work also recognized in the marketplace, since the question was about engineering. You do a lot of creativity, you put a lot of energy into it, and a lot of your personal intellect and innovation. You want to see that thing be successful in the marketplace. One reason that we haven't been as successful is we haven't done as good a job of marketing our products as our competition. So the important thing here is we're addressing that issue. You have the opportunity to innovate products and services and to see those products and services, hardware and software, successful in the marketplace and feel good about your performance. That's all you can offer. If that appeals to you, stay with this company, be part of it. We'd like to have you continue, certainly. Since here, there was a question about current parameters of the company size and related to Charlie Crist's comment that it'd be better to be a $10 billion company that's profitable than a $14 billion company that's losing money. And I would agree with Charlie. I mean, the objective of the enterprise is to generate a return so that you can continue to invest and continue to add value to your customers. You can't do this ad infinitum if you don't have a profit. So the size of the company is not so critical as the profitability of the company, the value you bring to your customers, and the environment that you have for your employees, a return for your shareholders. That's much easier to do if the company is growing. Clearly, the management would have a much easier time if revenues are growing and increasing as they did in the first quarter. But there's no particular revenue size that we're aiming for. There clearly is a return to our investors that we're aiming for. And we have a business model that would bring us into competition levels, competitive levels, with other similar companies in this industry. That's what we're driving for. And each of the business units has a subset of that that's appropriate to their business that they're in. So it's much more important to be profitable, but my belief is we have a better chance of achieving sustained profitability if we're growing. So clearly that's part of our philosophy and part of our strategy. The question with respect to the salary freeze I covered in some detail, so I'll skip that. There was a final question here said, is there a strategy for getting high name recognition companies like Dell or Compaq to commit to Alpha AXP technology? Not really. That's not a realistic expectation. I mean, it's one of those things that some of the analysts got confused about, and perhaps some of us in digital got confused about. But the reality is that on the desktop for PC companies, which is what Compaq and Dell are, they're going to remain committed to the Intel architecture, the x86 architecture, because that's where all of the PC-centric desktop applications are. Now, in the case of the servers, and in the case of workstations, it's a very different picture. There, the RISC processors like Alpha are winning quite handily in terms of performance over the Intel architecture. And that's going to continue, and if in fact that's increasing in terms of the performance gap between Alpha architecture and Intel architecture in terms of performance. So for workstations and servers, absolutely, we want to go out there and gain as many new converts as we can to design in our architecture into their systems. And we continue, of course, to promote our own architectures. But it's not realistic to expect PC companies to introduce RISC architectures at this time. The applications don't exist for those. Now, there's a tremendous opportunity for our company in the software space that those of you that are in software recognize is the ability to make it easy for applications written for the Windows environment to interoperate with other server environments like Unix, OpenVMS. These are areas that we can bring technological skills to solve customer problems, and it's one of our key strategic areas of focus. So those, I think, were the questions that were in the video. I hope I didn't forget one, and I'd be happy to take questions that you might have in the audience here today. Anything at all, anything that I might have said that you didn't understand, something that you wish I would have said or addressed, and I really encourage you to take this opportunity.
Hello, Bob. My name is Craig Scomp. I'm currently a software engineer on the HubWatch project. I was reviewing the last quarterly results, and I noted a couple of things. First thing is that revenues were up, and that includes product sales and service. And it also appeared to the analysts that we had a smaller loss than what they were expecting, and that was shown in the stock price going up. One big thing that I did notice is that we had some reduction in expenses, which is good, in SG&A and also R&D. At the same time, we had one line go up, which I thought was kind of bad, and that is the cost of sales. And I wanted to know if you would comment on that increase, please.
The cost of sales number, of course, includes a lot of things, but one of the things that we talk about the cost of goods or the cost of sales that we have reflects the changing mix in our products. In terms of cost of goods, what you find is that more and more of the products that we manufacture, material costs are a bigger and bigger part of that cost, and so that's an important trend to keep up with. In terms of the cost of actually selling reflects the transitions that we're making from a direct sales force to more and more through indirect channels. And during the transition, you still have some of the infrastructure in place that is was handling the smaller accounts with the direct sales force before you've cut over completely to the indirect channels, and that might account for some of that as well. With respect to SG&A line, we were down 4% in SG&A. If you looked at that, we should have been down more. And the reason that we were not down more largely is that We had a number of dispositions of assets during the quarter, and because of a change in requirements and the way you report your financials, we had to include the negative impact of those dispositions in our SG&A line, and that was about $50 million. That was offset somewhat by the sale of our Olivetti stock, which brought in about $65 million, but that one was called out as a separate line item. So there are a lot of puts and takes within the P&L. And in general, though, the trends are positive. You're right, though, that we'd, over time, as we move to our new model, I expect to see a decrease in the cost of sales, and I expect to see a decrease in the cost of goods of manufacturing because we're doing a better job of designing with modularity. If you looked at, for example, the 2100 server product that was in featured a little while ago, that product was designed with more a PC mentality to use, so insofar as possible, industry standard components. And it's the first time you're using the PCI interconnect with high performance servers. So the idea was designed for lower cost of the components that make up the product and also for ease of manufacturing. You'll see that when we introduce a whole bunch of new products in this month, in the month of November, that those products also will reflect more design for manufacturability, more standard components, and we'll have better margins, even though the price performance will be dramatically better than that of our previous products or of our competitors. So every line in the P&L has to be worked down so far as costs are concerned while we attempt to raise our margins. Other questions?
Hi, Bob. My name is Junaid. I work at HPN. A couple of months ago, I was shopping for a laser printer for home use. And after doing a very objective market search, I found out that the digital laser printer, by far the best, because it works both with Macintosh, IBM, PCs in general, and what was more important for me, with Next, which is very obscure product at this point. And in addition, it was by far the cheapest. However, only Leechmere carried it, and they were out of stock. And other places, like the salesperson in Sears, have never heard about it. He replied, I forget, with some comment like, you know, they're all digital or something strange like that. So as an engineer, it was very sad to see a very good product designed, manufactured to lose the market, you know, the fact that we lose the market because of sales. What can we do? What are we doing to overcome these problems?
That's interesting because thank you for the question. I'm really glad you asked it because in a lot of these presentations, I spend my time on our big systems or on our software or something. I don't talk about a lot of the other products, and inevitably I get email from somebody who's offended that I didn't talk about it. But if you think about our company and all of the products and all of the services and all of the capability we have, it's impossible in any reasonable amount of time to cover them all. But you're quite right about the printers. And what's interesting to me is we observed the same effect, and you were saddened and I was encouraged. So it's interesting. Because, see, digital's never had anything in the retail channel. We've never sold through retail. We've always sold through OEMs or to corporate customers directly. And that was the first evidence of a successful program started by Larry Cabernetti and his group to say we can manufacture and market our printer products aggressively through these channels to end-user consumers. And the reason you only see it in Leechmere is that's where it started. Just got off the ground, and we're going to be very successful with that product. You're quite right, as an engineer, in making a competitive analysis, there are more features at less cost than our competitors, including the much vaunted Hewlett-Packard that owns the printer market for those kind of printers. So this is a very encouraging sign for digital. We're going into retail. In the past, we said, oh, no, we don't want to deal with the consumer. Why not? I mean, the world is changing. Now, it's a different business. There are different business dynamics, very different business situations with respect to the responsiveness, inventories, price protection, all kinds of issues. But we can learn to be in that business, and so we're starting out relatively modest while we understand the business, and we intend to expand dramatically. Also in the printer area, you'll see that we're introducing some new products that combine print capability and fax capability. And so there's a lot of innovation going on there. And the printer group for this year, let's see, if I recall correctly, don't hold me to the precision of this, but if I recall correctly, in the quarter just ended, our printer sales were up 51%. over the same quarter a year before. And I do remember that we're aiming for, in Q2, manufacturing 100,000 printers. Big, serious output of printers. Our market share in the printer market worldwide is about 3%, as I recall. So it's very small, and yet we have every opportunity to be profitable, to show our innovative products, and reach both the corporate customers and the consumers through that retail channel. You're going to see more of our products moving into the retail channels to consumers directly as appropriate, and it's largely decisions made by the business units. In this particular case, it demonstrates the aggressiveness of the Components and Peripherals group to go out there and just make it happen. People say, well, no, we don't do that. We're digital. We don't do that. Larry just decided to go do it. And by the way, met his objectives last year, exceeded the profit goals. That's what we need. That's a demonstration of innovation and doing something untraditional at digital that had a good return for us. I'm optimistic about the future there as opposed to saddened, because it shows a lot of things that we're trying to do here. Other questions?
Good morning, Bob. My name is Dave Nelson. I work here in Networks Engineering. I wonder if you would give us some details about where you think the business units will end up in terms of autonomy. I've been impressed and swayed by some of the statements of author Tom Peters about the fact that the 90s and beyond are going to belong to the smaller, fast-moving companies. And certainly when we try to benchmark our competitors in the network space, most of them are small companies with fast-moving market response.
Well, the issue there is you can be quite sure that those competitors don't have an intention of remaining small. I mean, their intention is to grow and to capture market share. And so size itself is not a disadvantage, but bureaucracy and the inability to get any decisions made is quite a handicap. So the issue of going to business units was an attempt to break that handicap. We still have a lot of bureaucracy in our company, and I encourage our employees to challenge that bureaucracy. What's the value added of some of these rules that we have? We're trying to break down this stuff. I see it from time to time, by the way. My friends in finance are held responsible. And they say, well, it's that chief financial officer that's causing all this trouble, Vin Malarkey, and this and that. Not true. In the first quarter, we gave the responsibility for all of the things associated with the business units to the business units. So approval of air travel comes into play all the time. People want to go somewhere. Seems like you need so many signatures you can't get out of sight to service the customer. You know, some business units have said, gee, we're going to break through all of that. Two signatures are required, and you can go. Other business units hadn't gotten around to it, but the responsibilities in the business units. The point being that if we get focused on business units and we do have sufficient autonomy, still being consistent with the law, of course, and consistent with a sense of fairness and ethics across our company, which we're intending to maintain. So we have a controller function that's very important. But it's within the business unit to make some of these decisions on how they want to respond to the marketplace. And you have to. The biggest handicap in that big functional organization that we had is it could not be decisive. You couldn't make a response, and then you couldn't be proactive to take it to your competitor. What we want to do in networks, as well as all of our business unit groups, is be aggressive. Look for opportunities to tuck it to our competition. Have some fun. It's not fun losing. It's fun winning. And we have been doing that. As you know, we've been innovating in both our hardware and software spaces in the networks area, and we're doing well. In the hardware case, I think Larry Walker mentioned, we had achieved number three position in terms of hubs with more than 50,000 hubs shipped. In the software area, our PathWorks product is widely regarded as a leadership product, and Gene Prue mentioned shipping 10,000 a week, and we've been shipping 10,000 a week for lots of weeks. So a very successful product, and there are many others. But the key to it being, break through those bureaucracies, be aggressive, be innovative. Now, in the business units, since those managers are measured and rewarded in terms of their financial performance, among other metrics, they have every vested interest to listen to you with your suggestions about how they can be more responsive to our customers. They're motivated in that way. And to the extent they're not motivated that way, they will not succeed and they'll be replaced. So the issue is create a dynamic and environment that is like the small companies have. One where you have some freedom to innovate, where you can take some risk, where you're really accountable. You can be sure, as I was an entrepreneur before, And it's not as easy as it sounds. You know, there's a lot of risk in there, and you are very accountable. You don't have the size and scope that digital has to be able to weather those downturns. And so there's a lot of puts and takes in small and large companies. Now, one thing about the new organization you didn't ask about, but I wanted to amplify, is you look at the way we've grouped some of these things. The intent was, particularly, let's say, in components division. You look at the things that are grouped in the components division, the intent is to not only be successful within each business unit that's in that division, but also to look for synergies between those business units to create new products and services that you wouldn't otherwise be able to engineer easily and bring to market. And so we're looking for those kinds of synergies, and there'll be some things coming out of that as a part of our strategic work that we're doing. But anyway, that's the idea. So try to get the best things from having the incredible talent that we have in this company and the resources that we have, access to customers, the global support that we can provide that, of course, small companies can't. Leverage on those things, but also break through the things that slow us down as a company so that the business units can be as agile as the smaller competitors. Other questions? Thank you.
Hello, Bob. My name is Barry Spinney. And a few months back, I'm not sure if you saw it in Spectrum, they did a comparison of various risk architectures, comparing AXP to PowerPC, the HP, the Sun, and also the Intel. We didn't fare that well in that survey, if you had looked at it. And I was just wondering what long-term we can do to turn around that perception. If I read that article and I didn't work for DEC, I wouldn't have wanted to buy an Alpha. In particular, when you look at PowerPC sales, they are growing much faster than even the Alpha sales. Do you see us one day getting onto a PowerPC bandwagon or doing something like IBM did with the PowerPC, giving it to somebody like Alpha, Apple or somebody small like that?
I don't personally see any strategy that would have us going to a different risk architecture than Alpha, because Alpha is architecturally the cleanest second-generation design. I didn't see the article that you're referencing, so I'm not sure what the author's perspective was. Really, the overwhelming majority of applications are going to be written for the Intel architecture, which is fueling the growth of digital's PC business, which is now among the top 10 worldwide and continuing to gain market share and do very, very well. So we have a dual architecture strategy. I've never seen an article, there may be one, but I've never seen one that talks about architecture that doesn't concede that Alpha AXP is the cleanest, most scalable, highest performance. Now, other than the Apple account, will PowerPC be successful? Very questionable in my mind. It's very questionable. It's possible because IBM has internally a large volume, and if they can succeed in getting all of their different architectures to coalesce around this thing, it's possible. But think about how hard it's been at digital. Think about how hard it's been to move from VAX to Alpha over a period of several years, and that really is a very clean architectural transition to compared to the one facing IBM, as IBM has their Power architecture, which is not the same thing, the AS400 architecture, the 370 architecture is now 390. All of this stuff somehow has to be brought together, and they keep saying that, well, they're going to do some of this in software, some of it in hardware. Very complicated problem. It's very complicated. I'm not clear they can be successful. I don't think that the PowerPC will win many converts outside of that arena. The reason is it doesn't offer any advantage over Intel. If there were a huge advantage over Intel, you'd think so. When PowerPC was started in its design, the objective was to offer twice the performance as the Intel architecture. But Intel kind of upset that apple cart by bringing out the Pentium. And by driving the price of the Pentium down very rapidly, Intel has a processor that is as high performance as PowerPC, at about the same cost, with far more people writing applications for it. So they don't have an advantage. In Alpha's case, Alpha does have several times the performance of the Pentium. In the case of integer performance, 2.5 to 3 times. Case of floating point, 5 or 6 times. So you have enough increase that for server applications and some other applications, it clearly offers value. You want to put your application on it. Or just in terms of with OSF, because of the 64-bit addressing capability that you have, there's applications where it clearly has more capability than any other architecture.
But if you're just going up head-to-head with Intel and your argument is, I'm as good as Intel but different, I think that's a failing strategy. I don't think there's a chance of that succeeding personally. Other questions?
Hi, my name is Da Ming Chu. You talked earlier that we've sold some business which are closed this quarter. Could you just give us a feel how much impact those sales would be on the revenue and on the employee population for this quarter?
Yes, one of the questions has to do with, as we do disinvestments, what are the impact on our revenues, because certainly revenues move with those disinvestments, and also on employee populations. I think in the case of two that come to mind that were closed during the quarter and have been announced, the sale of our disks, tapes, the components part of our storage business to Quantum Corporation was very successfully engineered by Charlie Crist. And if you look at it, one of the most rewarding things about it is that it took the non-strategic part of our storage business, and the revenue with that goes now to Quantum Corporation, and the encouraging part is 4,700 jobs, roughly, that at Digital might have been lost or preserved as part of Quantum Corporation. That's a very big deal to me and to Charlie. As we looked at the different bids that we had for that business, one reason we wanted to pursue it with Quantum as opposed to other bidders was because there was not much overlap with Quantum and Digital, so that the employee population would not be severely impacted by the acquisition. And so that's a very key thing to us. In addition to that, as I mentioned, it brought in $360 million in cash, which we can use. So we needed that cash. The revenue that was associated with that is between $500 million and $750 million. So it's a lot of money that comes out of the revenue stream. But again, all of the expenses associated with that revenue come out as well. And for good timing, I guess, the disk business right now is in a downturn. So that would have had ongoing this year a negative impact. We don't have that on our P&L anymore. So that will help us be more positive. Similarly, in the case of the RDB acquisition by Oracle, which has yet to be approved by the Justice Department, but we expect it will be approved, when it is approved, then all of the engineers that want to remain working on that database as part of Oracle Corporation still have a job and have the opportunity to continue to contribute to databases in a company focused on databases, will sell more digital platforms and service our customers. So that's a very important part of those deals. Again, that's expected to bring in $108 million in cash, which we can use to help pay for our restructuring. We are quite optimistic that we will generate enough from these activities and from operations to pay for the restructuring so that we can get to be competitive. We expect to be competitive by the end of the fiscal year. We expect to have all of this major restructuring and downsizing behind us by the end of the fiscal year. That's our objective, is let's get it behind us so we can focus on returning to profitable growth, which is what we all would like to do. I want to thank you this morning for the opportunity to visit with you. I've got a few minutes. If you have a question you didn't get to answer, and you'd like to come down and ask me, maybe you'd feel more comfortable. I'll hang around for a minute or two here, and I'd be glad to answer your questions if I can. Again, thank you for coming. Thank you for all your hard work. We're very, very close to turning this thing around. I think we can do it. If you meet your commitments, I know we can do it. I think working together, we will do it. Thank you.